Chapter 45. I stopped sleeping. I simply stopped. I was so disappointed, so profoundly dejected, that I just stayed up night after night, pacing, thinking, wishing I had a TV. But I was living on a military base now, in a cell-like room. Then, mornings, on zero sleep, I'd tried to fly an Apache. Recipe for disaster. I tried herbal remedies. They helped, a bit. I was able to get an hour or two of sleep, but they left me feeling brain dead most mornings. Then the army informed me I'd be hitting the road, a series of maneuvers and exercises. Maybe just the thing, I thought. Snap me out of it. Or it might be the last straw. First they sent me to America, the Southwest. I spent a week or so hovering over a bleak place called Gila Bend. Conditions were said to be similar to Afghanistan. I became more fluid with the Apache, more lethal with its missiles, more at home in the dust. I blew up a lot of cacti. Wish I could say it wasn't fun. Next I went to Cornwall, a desolate place called Bodmin Moor, January 2012. From blazing hot to bitter cold, the moors are always cold in January, but I arrived just as a fierce winter storm was blowing in. I was billeted with 20 other soldiers. We spent the first few days trying to acclimatise. We rose at 5 a.m, got the blood flowing with a run and a vomit, then bundled into classrooms and learned about the latest methods that bad actors had devised for snatching people. Many of these methods would be put to use against us over the next few days as we tried to navigate a long march across the frigid moor. The exercise was called Escape and Evasion, and it was one of the last hurdles for flight crews and pilots before deployment. Trucks took us to an isolated spot where we did some field lessons, learned some survival techniques. We caught a chicken, killed it, plucked it, ate it. Then it started to rain. We were instantly soaked and exhausted. Our superiors looked amused. They grabbed me and two others, loaded us onto a truck, drove us to a place even more remote. Out! We squinted at the terrain, the skies. Really? Here? Colder, heavier rain started to come down. The instructors shouted that we should imagine our helicopter had just crash-landed behind enemy lines, and our only hope of survival was to go by foot from one end of the moor to the other, a distance of 10 miles. We'd been given a meta-narrative, which we now recalled. We were a Christian army, fighting a militia sympathetic to Muslims. Our mission? Evade the enemy, escape the forbidden terrain. Go! The truck roared away. Wet, cold, we looked around, looked at each other. Well, this sucks. We had a map, a compass, and each man had a bivy bag. Essentially a body-length waterproof sock to sleep in. No food was allowed. Which way? This way? Okay. Bodmin was desolate, allegedly uninhabited. But here and there in the distance, we saw farmhouses. Lighted windows, smoke curling from brick chimneys. How we longed to knock on a door. In the good old days, people would help out the soldiers on exercise, but now things were different. Locals had been scolded many times by the army. They knew not to open their doors to strangers with bivy bags. One of the two men on my team was my mate Phil. I liked Phil, but I started to feel something like unbounded love for the other man, because he told us he'd visited Bodmin Moor as a summer walker, and he knew where we were. More, he knew how to get us out. He led, we followed like children, through the dark and into the next day. At dawn, we found a wood of fir trees. The temperature approached freezing. The rain fell even harder. We said to hell with our solitary bivy bags and curled up together. Spooned, actually. Each trying to get into the middle, where it was warmer. Because I knew him, spooning Phil felt less awkward, and at the same time, much more. But the same went for spooning the third man. Sorry, that your hand? After a few hours of something vaguely approximating sleep, we peeled ourselves apart and began the long march again. The exercise required that we stop at several checkpoints. At each one, we had to complete a task. We managed to hit every checkpoint, perform every task, and at the last checkpoint, a kind of safe house, we were told the exercise was over. It was the middle of the night, pitch black. The directing staff appeared and announced, "Well done, guys, you made it." I nearly passed out on my feet. They loaded us onto a truck, told us we were headed back to the base. Suddenly, a group of men in camo jackets and black balaclavas appeared. My first thought was Lord Mountbatten being ambushed by the IRA. I don't know why. Entirely different circumstance, but maybe some vestigial memory of terrorism deep in my DNA. There were explosions, gunshots, guys storming the truck and screaming at us to look down at the ground. They wrapped blacked-out ski goggles over our eyes, zip-tied our hands, dragged us off. We were pushed into what sounded like an underground bunker system. Damp, wet walls, echoey. We were taken from room to room. The bags over our heads were ripped off, then put back on. In some rooms we were treated well, in others we were treated like dirt. Emotions went up and down. One minute we'd be offered a glass of water, the next we'd be shoved to our knees and told to keep our hands above our heads. 30 minutes, an hour, from one stress position to another. We hadn't really slept in 72 hours. Much of what they did to us was illegal under the rules of the Geneva Conventions, which was the goal. At some point, I was blindfolded, moved into a room where I could sense that I wasn't alone. I had a feeling it was Phil in there with me, but maybe it was the other guy. Or a guy from one of the other teams. I didn't dare ask. Now we could hear faint voices somewhere above or below, inside the building. Then a strange noise, like running water. They were trying to confuse, disorient us. I was terrifyingly cold. I'd never been so cold. Far worse than the North Pole. With the cold came numbness, drowsiness. I snapped to attention when the door burst open and our captors barged in. They took off our blindfolds. I was right. Phil was there. Also the other guy. We were ordered to strip. They pointed at our bodies, our flaccid cocks. They went on and on about how small. And I wanted to say, you don't know the half of what's wrong with this appendage. They interrogated us. We gave them nothing. They took us into separate rooms, interrogated us some more. I was told to kneel. Two men walked in, screamed at me. They left. Atonal music was piped in. A violin being scraped by an angry two-year-old. What is that? The voice answered, silence! I became convinced that the music wasn't a recording, but an actual child, perhaps also being held prisoner. What in heaven's name was that kid doing to that violin? More, what were they doing to that kid? The men returned. Now they had Phil. They'd gone through his social media, studied him, and they began saying things about his family, his girlfriend, which scared him. It was astonishing how much they knew. How can perfect strangers know so much? I smiled. Welcome to the party, pal. I wasn't taking this seriously enough. One of the men grabbed me, shoved me against a wall. He wore a black balaclava. He pressed his forearm into my neck, spitting every word from his mouth. He pressed my shoulders against the concrete. He ordered me to stand 3 feet from the wall, arms above my head, all 10 fingertips against the wall. Stress position. 2 minutes. 10 minutes. My shoulders started to seize. I couldn't breathe. A woman entered. She was wearing a shemagh over her face. She went on and on about something I didn't understand. I couldn't keep up. Then I realized, mummy. She was talking about my mother. Your mother was pregnant when she died, eh? With your sibling, a Muslim baby? I fought to turn my head, to look at her. I said nothing, but I screamed at her with my eyes. You doing this for my benefit now, or yours? Is this the exercise, or are you getting a cheap thrill? She stormed out. One of the captors spat in my face. We heard the sound of gunshots and a helicopter. We were dragged into a different room and someone called out, okay, that's it. End exercise. There was a debrief, during which one of the instructors offered a half-assed apology about the stuff to do with my mother. Hard for us to find something about you that you'd be shocked we knew. I didn't answer. We felt you needed to be tested. I didn't answer. But that took it a bit too far. Fair enough. Later I learned that two other soldiers in the exercise had gone mad.